dramatize the scene. Trials of Greece, the princes Orgulus, their high blood chafed, after the port of Athens sent their ships, fraught with the ministers and instruments of cruel war. 69, that wore their crowned regal, from the Athenian bay put forth toward Phrygia, and their vow is made to ransack Troy, within whose strong immures the ravished Helen, Menelaus' queen, with wanton Paris sleeps, and that's the quarrel. To Tenedos they come, and the deep-drawing barks do there disgorge their warlike fraughtage. Now on Dardan plains, the fresh and yet unbruised Greeks do pitch their brave pavilions. Priam's six-gated city, Dardan and Timbria, Ilias, Cetas, Troian, and Antinorides, with massy staples and corresponsive and fulfilling bolts, spur up the sons of Troy. Now expectation, tickling city spirits on one and other side, Troian and Greek, sets all on hazard. And hither am I come, a prologue armed, but not in confidence of author's pen or actor's voice, but suited in like condition as our argument, to tell you, fair beholders, that our play leaps o'er the vaunt and firstlings of those broils, beginning in the middle, starting thence away to what may be digested in a play. Like or find fault, do as your pleasures are. Now good or bad, 'tis but the chance of war.
Call here my varlet, I'll arm again.
Why should I war without the walls of Troy that find such cruel battle here within? Each Troyan that is master of his heart, let him to field. Troilus, alas, hath not.
Will his gear ne'er be mended?
The Greeks are strong and skillful to their strength, fierce to their skill, and to their fierceness valiant. But I am weaker than a woman's tear, tamer than sleep, fonder than ignorance, less valiant than a virgin in the night, and skillless as unpracticed infants.
Well, I have told you enough of this. For my part, I'll not meddle nor make no farther. He that will have a cake out of the wheat must needs tarry the grinding.
Have I not tarried?
Aye, the grinding, but you must tarry the bolting.
Have I not tarried?
Aye, the bolting, but you must tarry the leavening.
Still have I tarried?
Aye, to the leavening. But there's yet in the word hereafter. The kneading, the making of the cake, the heating of the oven and the baking. Nay, you must stay the cooling too, or you may chance to burn your lips.
Patience herself, what goddess there she be, doth less a blench of sufferance than I do. At Priam's royal table do I sit, and when fair Cressid comes into my thoughts, so, traitor, when she comes, when is she thence?
Well, she looked yesternight fairer than ever I saw her look, or any woman else.
I was about to tell thee, when my heart, as wedged with a sigh, would rive in twain, lest Hector or my father should deceive me, I have, as when the sun doth light a storm, buried this sigh in wrinkle of a smile. But sorrow that is couched in seeming gladness is like that mirth fate turns to sudden sadness.
And her hair were not somewhat darker than Helen's walk or two. There were no more comparison between the women. But for my part, she is my kinswoman. I would not, as they term it, praise her. But I would. Somebody had heard her talk yesterday as I did. Oh, I will not dispraise your sister Cassandra's wit.
Oh, Pandarus. I tell thee, Pandarus. When I do tell thee there my hopes lie drowned, reply not in how many fathoms deep they lie indrenched. I tell thee I am mad in Cressid's love. Thou answerest, she is fair. Pourest in the open ulcer of my heart, her eyes, her hair, her cheek, her gait, her voice. Handlest in thy discourse, oh, that her hand, in whose comparisons all bites are ink, writing that own reproach, to whose soft seizure the signet's down is harsh, and spirit of sense hard as the palm of ploughman. This thou tell'st me, as true thou tell'st me, when I say I love her. But saying thus, instead of oil and balm, thou layest in every gash that love hath given me the life that made it.
I speak no more than truth.
Thou dost not speak so much.
Faith, I'll not meddle in't. Let her be as she is. If she be fair, it is the better for her. And she be not, she has the men's in her own hands.
Good Pandarus. Honor, Pandarus.
I have had my labor for my travail. Ill thought on of her, and ill thought on of you, gone between and between. But small thanks for my labor.
What, art thou angry, Pandarus? What with me?
Because she's kin to me. Oh, therefore she's not so fair as Helen. And she were not kin to me. She would be as fair on Friday as Helen is on Sunday, but what care I? Oh, I care not, and she were a blackamoor, it is all one to me.
Say I, she is not fair.
I do not care whether you do or no. She's a fool to stay behind her father, let her to the Greeks, and so I'll tell her the next time I see her. For my part, I'll meddle nor make no more of the matter.
Pandarus.
Not I.
Sweet Pandarus.
Pray you, speak no more to me. I will leave all as I found it, and there an end.
Peace, you ungracious clamors. Peace, rude sounds, fools on both sides. Helen must needs be fair when with your blood you daily paint her thus. I cannot fight upon this argument. It is too starved a subject for my sword. But Pandarus, oh gods, how you do plague me. I cannot come to Cressid but by Pandar, and he's as tetchy to be wooed to woo as she is stubborn chaste against all suit. Tell me, Apollo, for thy Daphne's love, what Cressid is, what Pandar, and what we. Her bed is India. There she lies, a pearl. Between our Ilium and where she resides, let it be called the wild and wandering flood, ourself the merchant, and this sailing Pandar, our doubtful hope, our convoy, and our bark.
How now, Prince Troilus, wherefore not afield?
Because not there.
Hmm?
This woman's answer sorts for womanish it is to be from thence. What news, Aeneas, from the field today?
That Paris is returned home and hurt.
By whom, Aeneas?
Troilus, by Menelaus.
Let Paris bleed. 'Tis but a scar to scorn. Paris is gored with Menelaus' horn.
Hark! What good sport is out of town today?
Better at home, if would I might, were may. But to the sport abroad. Are you bound thither?
In all swift haste.
Come, go with them together.
Who are those went by?
Queen Hecuba and Helen.
And whither go they?
Up to the eastern tower, whose height commands a subject all the vale to see the battle. Hector, whose patience is as a virtue fixed, today was moved.
Ooh.
Itched Andromache and struck his armourer, and like as there were husbandry in war, before the sun rose he was harnessed light, and to the field goes he, where every flower did as a prophet weep what it foresaw in Hector's wrath.
What was his cause of anger?
The noise goes this. There is among the Greeks a lord of Trojan blood, nephew to Hector. They call him Ajax.
Good, and what of him?
They say he's a very man per se and stands alone.
So do all men, unless they are drunk, sick, or have no legs.
This man, lady, hath robbed many beasts of their particular additions. He's as valiant as the lion, churlish as the bear, slow as the elephant. A man into whom nature has so crowded humours that his valour is crushed into folly, his folly forced with discretion. There is no man hath a virtue that he hath not a glimpse of, nor any man an attaint, but he carries some stain of it. He's melancholy without cause and merry against hair. He hath the joints of everything, but everything so out of joint that he's a gutty briarius, many hands and no use, or a purblinded Argus, all eyes and no sight.
But how should this man that makes me smile make Hector angry?
They say he yesterday coped Hector in the battle and struck him down.
Oh.
The disdain and shame whereof hath ever since kept Hector fasting and waking.
Who comes here?
Madam, your uncle Pandarus.
Oh, Hector's a gallant man.
As may be in the world, lady.
What's that? What's that?
Oh, good morrow, Uncle Pandarus.
Good morrow, Cousin Cressid. What do you talk of? Good morrow, Alexander. How do you, cousin? When were you at Ilium?
This morning, Uncle.
What were you talking of when I came? Was Hector armed and gone ere you came to Ilium? Helen was not up, was she?
Hector was gone, but Helen was not up.
And so Hector was stirring early.
That were we talking of, and of his anger.
Was he angry?
So he says here.
True, he was so. I know the cause, too. He'll lay about him today, I can tell them that. And there's Troilus will not come far behind him. Let them take heed of Troilus. I can tell them that, too.
What, is he angry, too?
Oh, Troilus? Troilus is the better man of the two.
Oh, Jupiter, there's no comparison.
What? Not between Troilus and Hector? Do you know a man if you see him?
Aye, if ever I saw him before and knew him.
Well, I say Troilus is Troilus.
Then you say as I say, for I'm sure he's not Hector.
No, now Hector is not Troilus in some degrees.
Just to each of them, he is himself.
Himself? Alas, poor Troilus, I would he were.
So he is.
Condition I'd gone barefoot to India.
He is not Hector.
Himself? No, he's not himself. Would or were himself. Well, the gods are above. Time must friend or end. Well, Troilus, well, I would my heart were in her body. No, Hector is not a better man than Troilus.
Excuse me.
He is elder.
Pardon me, pardon me.
T'others not come to it. You shall tell me another tale when t'others come to it. Hector shall not have his wit this year.
He shall not need it if he have his own.
Nor his qualities.
No matter.
Nor his beauty.
Would not become him his own better.
Ah, you have no judgment, niece. Helen herself swore t'other day that Troilus for a brown favor. For so it is, I must confess. No, not brown, neither.
No, but brown.
Faith, to say truth, brown and not brown.
To say the truth, true and not true.
She praised his complexion above Paris.
Why, Paris hath colour enough.
So he has.
Then Troilus have too much, if she praised him above. His complexion is higher than his. He, having colour enough and the other higher, is too flaming a praise for a good complexion. I had as lief Helen's golden tongue had commended Troilus for a copper nose.
I swear to you, I think Helen loves him better than Paris.
Then she's a merry Greek indeed.
Nay, I'm sure she does. She came to him t'other day into the compassed window, and you know he has not passed 3 or 4 hairs on his chin.
Indeed, a tapster's arithmetic may soon bring his particulars therein to a total.
Fine. And yet will he, within 3 pound, lift as much as his brother Hector.
Is he so young a man and so old a lifter?
But to prove to you that Helen loves him, she came and puts me her white hand to his cloven chin.
Juno, have mercy. How came it cloven?
You know 'tis dimpled. I think his smiling becomes him better than any man in all Phrygia.
Oh, he smiles valiant.
Does he not?
Oh, yes, and 'twere a cloud in autumn.
Oh, why go to then? But to prove to you that Helen loves Troilus.
Troilus will stand to the proof if you approve it so.
Troilus? Why, he esteems her no more than I esteem an addle egg.
If you love an addle egg as well as you love an idle head, you'd eat chickens in the shell.
Oh, I cannot choose but laugh to think how she tickled his chin. Indeed, she has a marvellous white hand, I must needs confess.
Without the rack.
And she takes upon her to spy a white hair on his chin.
Alas, poor chin, many a wart is richer.
Oh, but there was such laughing. Queen Hecuba laughed and her eyes ran off.
With millstones.
Cassandra laughed.
But there was more temperate fire under the pot of her eyes. Did her eyes run off too?
And Hector laughed.
At what was all this laughing?
Marry at the white hair that Helen spied on Troilus's chin.
And had been a green hair, I should have laughed too.
Well, they laughed not so much at the hair as at his pretty answer.
What was his answer?
Quoth she, here's but 2 and 50 hairs on your chin, and one of them is white.
This is her question.
That's true, make no question of that. 2 and 50 hairs, quoth he, and one white. That white hair is my father, and all the rest are his sons. Jupiter, quoth she, which of these hairs is Paris, my husband? The forked one, quoth he, plucked out and give it him. Oh, but there was such laughing, and Helen so blushed, and Paris so chafed, and all the rest so laughed. Let it pass.
So let it now, for it has been a great while going by.
Well, cousin, I told you a thing yesterday. Think on't.
So I do.
I'll be sworn, 'tis true. He will weep you, and 'twere a man born in April.
And I'll spring up in his tears, and 'twere a nettle against May.
Oh, hark! They're coming from the field. Shall we stand up here and see them as they pass towards Ilium? Good knees do, sweet niece Cressida.
At your pleasure.
Here's an excellent place. Here we may see most briefly. I'll tell you them all by their names as they pass by. But mark Troilus above the rest.
He's not so loud.
Oh, that's Aeneas. Is not that a brave man? He's one of the flowers of Troy, I can tell you. But mark Troilus, you shall see anon.
Who's that?
That's Antenor. He has a shrewd wit, I can tell you. And he's a man good enough. He's one of the soundest judgments in Troy, whosoever, and a proper man of person. When comes Troilus? I show you Troilus anon. If he see me, you shall see him now that way.
Will he give you the nod?
You shall see.
If he do, the rich shall have more.
That's Hector. That. Look you, that. There's a fellow. Go thy way, Hector. Oh, there's a brave man, niece. Oh, brave Hector. Look how he looks. There's a countenance. Is not a brave man.
Oh, brave man.
It does man's heart good. Look you, what hacks are on his helmet. Look you yonder. Do you see? Look you there. There's no jesting. There's laying on take off from will, as they say. There be hacks.
Be those with swords?
Swords? He cares not. And the devil comes to him. Tis all one. Oh, my God, see it. It does one's heart good. Oh, yonder comes Paris. Yonder comes Paris. Look you yonder. Is not a gallant man too, is not? Why, this is brave now. Who said he came home hurt today? He's not hurt. Why, this will do Helen's heart good now. Would I could see Troilus now. You shall see Troilus now.
Who's that?
That's Helenus. I marvel where Troilus is. That's Helenus. I think he went not forth today. That's Helenus.
Can Helenus fight, Uncle?
Helenus? Oh, yes, fight. Marvel where Troilus is. Hark! Do you not hear the people cry Troilus? Helenus is a priest.
Sneaking fellow comes yonder.
Where? Yonder? Where? That's the difference. But it is Troilus! There's a man, niece. Brave Troilus, the prince of chivalry!
Hark
and note him. Oh, brave Troilus! Look well upon him, niece. Look you how his sword is bloodied, and he's held more hack than Hector's, and how he looks and how he goes. Oh, admirable youth! He ne'er saw 23. Go thy way, Troilus, go thy way! And thy sister were a grace or a daughter, a goddess, he should take his choice. Oh, admirable man! Paris is dirty, and I want hell to change, to give an eye to boot.
Here comes more!
Oh, that's his food stone, chaperon, chaperon. Porridge after meat. Oh, I could live and die in the eyes of Troilus. Ne'er look, the eagles are gone. Crows and doors. Oh, I'd rather be such a man as Troilus than Agamemnon and all Greece.
There is among the Greeks Achilles. A better man than Troilus.
Achilles, a drayman, a porter, a very camel.
Well.
Why, have you any discretion? Have you any eyes? Do you know what a man is? Is not birth, beauty, good shape, discourse, manhood, learning, gentleness, virtue, youth, liberality, and so forth, the spice and salt that season a man?
Aye, a minced man. And then to be baked with no date in the pie. For then a man's date is out.
Oh, you are such another woman. One knows not at what ward you lie.
Upon my back, to defend my belly. Upon my wit, to defend my wiles. Upon my secrecy, to defend mine honesty. My mask, to defend my beauty. And you, to defend all these. And at all these wards I lie at 1,000 watches.
Say, one of your watches.
Nay, I'll watch you for that. And that's one of the chiefest of them, too. If I cannot ward what I would not have hit, I can watch you for telling how I took the blow. Unless it's well past arming, and then it's past watching.
Oh, you are such another.
Sir, my lord would instantly speak with you.
Where?
At your own house.
Good boy, tell him I'll come. I doubt he be hurt. Fare ye well, good niece.
Adieu, uncle.
I'll be with you, niece, by and by.
To bring, uncle?
A token from Troilus.
By the same token. You are a bore! Words, vows, gifts, tears, and love's full sacrifice he offers in another's enterprise. But more in Troilus, thousandfold I see, than in the glass of Pandar's praise may be. Yet hold I off. Women are angels wooing. Things won are done. Joy's soul lies in the doing. That she, beloved, knows naught that knows not this. Men prize the thing ungained more than it is. That she was never yet that ever knew love got so sweet as when desire did sue. Therefore this maxim out of love I teach. Achievement is command. Ungained, beseech. Then though my heart's content firm love doth bear, nothing of that shall from mine eyes appear.
Princes, what grief hath set the jaundice on your cheeks? The ample proposition that hope makes in all designs begun on earth below fails in the promised largeness. Checks and disasters grow in the veins of actions highest reared, as knots by the conflux of meeting sap infect the sound pine, and diverts his grain, tortive and errant from his course of growth. Nor, princes, is it matter new to us that we come short of our suppose so far, that after 7 years' siege yet Troy walls stand. Sith every action that hath gone before, whereof we have record, trial did draw bias and thwart, not answering the aim and that unbodied figure of the thought that gave it surmised shape. Why then, you princes, do you with cheeks abashed behold our works and think them shame, which are indeed naught else but the protractive trials of great Jove, to find persistive constancy in men, the fineness of which metal is not found in fortune's love, for then the bold and coward, the wise and fool, the artist and unread, the hard and soft, seem all affined and kin. But in the wind and tempest of her frown, distinction with a broad and powerful thing at all winnows the light away. And what hath mass or matter by itself lies rich in virtue and unmingled.
With due observance of thy godly seat, great Agamemnon, Nestor shall apply thy latest words. In the reproof of chance lies the true proof of men. The sea being smooth, how many shallow bauble boats dare sail upon her patient breast, making their way with those of nobler bulk? But let the ruffian Boreas once enrage the gentle Thetis, and anon behold the strong rib bark through liquid mountains cut bounding between the two moist elements like Perseus' horse. Where's then the saucy boat whose weak untimbered sides but even now co-rival greatness, either to harbour fled or made a toast for Neptune? Even so doth valour show and valour's worth divide in storms of fortune, for in her ray and brightness the herd had more annoyance by the breeze than by the tiger. But when the splitting wind makes flexible the knees of knotted oaks, and flies flee under shade, why then the thing of courage roused with rage doth sympathize, and with an accent tuned in self-same key, retorts to chiding fortune.
Agamemnon, a great commander, nerve and bone of Greece, heart of our numbers, soul and only spirit in whom the tempers and the minds of all should be shut up, hear what Ulysses speaks. Besides the applause and approbation, the which most mighty for thy place and sway, and thou most reverend for thy stretched out life, I give to both your speeches, which were such as Agamemnon all the hands of Greece should hold up high in brass, and such again as venerable Nestor, hatched in silver, should with a bond of air strong as the axle tree on which the heavens ride, knit all Greeks' ears to his experienced tongue. Yet let it please both, thou great and wise, to hear Ulysses speak.
Speak, Prince of Ithaca, and be it of less expect that matter needless of importless burthen divide thy lips, than we are confident when rank Thersites opes his mastic jaws, we shall hear music, wit, and oracle.
Troy, yet upon his basis, had been down, and the great Hector's sword had lacked a master. But for these instances, the specialty of rule hath been neglected. And look how many Grecian tents do stand hollow upon this plain, so many hollow factions. When that the general is not like the hive to whom the foragers shall all repair, what honey is expected? Degree being visited, the unworthiest shows as fairly in the mask. The heavens themselves, the planets, and this center observe degree, priority, and place. insistia, course, proportion, season, form, office and custom in all line of order. And therefore is the glorious planet Sol, in noble eminence enthroned and sphered amidst the other, whose medicinable eye corrects the ill aspects of planets evil, and posts, like the commandment of a king, sans check to good and bad. But when the planets in evil mixture to disorder wander, what plagues and what portents, what mutiny, what raging of the sea, shaking of earth, commotion in the winds, frights, changes, horrors divert and crack, rend and deracinate the unity and married calm of states quite from their fixture. Oh, when degree is shaked, which is the ladder to all high designs, the enterprise is sick. How could communities, degrees in schools and brotherhoods in cities, peaceful commerce from dividable shores, the primogenitive and due of birth, prerogative of age, crowns, scepters, laurels, but by degree stand in authentic place? Take but degree away. Untune that string, and hark what discord follows. Each thing meets in mere oppugnancy. The bounded waters should lift their bosoms higher than the shores, and make a sop of all this solid globe. Strength should be lord of imbecility, and the rude son should strike his father dead. Force should be right, or rather right and wrong, between whose endless jar justice resides, should lose their names. And so should justice too. Then everything includes itself in part into will, will into appetite, and appetite an universal wolf, so doubly seconded with will and power, must make perforce an universal prey, and last eat up himself. Great Agamemnon, this chaos, when degree is suffocate, follows the choking. And this neglection of degree it is that by a pace goes backward with a purpose it hath to climb. The general's disdained by him one step below, he by the next, that next by him beneath. So every step, exampled by the first pace that is sick of his superior, grows to an envious fever of pale and bloodless emulation. And 'tis this fever that keeps Troy on foot, not her own sinews. But to end a tale of length, Troy in our weakness stands, not in her strength.